Scott Hansen.
Pat McClain.
Hey, on this week's program, we're going to talk about rising interest rates and how that might impact your retirement.
We're going to talk with Chris Farrell, and he's going to ask you the question, what you should ask yourself at retirement, what do I do next?
So we're going to talk with a caller, Sarah, who wonders if she has enough money for retirement.
She was absolutely delightful.
And we've got an advisor story with Dave Cox sharing about an inheritance. So stick around for Hansen McClain.
And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are with us this week. And whether you're listening to us live on the radio or you're listening to us via our podcast, we are glad you are part of the program. Actually, technically, you are listening to it recorded, regardless of where you are. But
yes.
We're glad
we're still, we're still here talking with you.
Still here in your lives. And we consider it an honor and privilege and doing this for many years. And we're glad you're here. But so I want to start off with Pat, and I've got to, we got some other stuff here, but I want to start with the volatility, not in the stock market,
but in the bond market.
Yes.
I'm just guessing.
Yes.
Because it has been volatile.
For example, the not too long ago, the United Kingdom's bond, they're just the equivalent of our treasury bond, it had a movement in price of roughly 11% in a four-day period on decline.
On the downside.
Right? So we talk about, and here's how it relates to you. So if you're thinking, all right, well, why are you talking about this?
Well, it's
United Kingdom, Brexit,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. It's all that. It's not all that.
Yeah, because we're having volatility in our own government bond markets.
Correct.
So the longer a bond is, the longer the term a bond is, the more volatile we will see the price.
On both the upside and the downside based on interest rate moves.
Now, how do most investors choose investments?
By looking at the rates of return.
Looking at the rates of return. So if you went out and said, well, I probably should have some money, maybe in government bonds would be wise, some safe government bonds. And you said, who has the best performing government bond fund the last 5 years or last 1 year? It's most likely those bond funds that have had long-term bonds.
So when you look at a rate of return on a bond fund, it's a factor of two things. One is the price of the bond either going up or down, and the other is the interest it's actually paying.
Yes. So
either part of its appreciation or depreciation, and the other is the interest it's paying. So if you bought a long-term bond, let's say it was paying 3%, let's call it 4%, a 30-year bond and it was paying 4%, and interest rates dropped to 3%, you would have seen a bigger rate of return than 4% because as interest rates decline, bond values go up.
So as an example, let's say that Pat went out and bought bonds, put $100,000 in at government bonds paying 4% for the next 10 years. Pat would receive $4,000 a year in interest every year from the United States government. And 10 years from now, would receive his $100,000 principal, and either if he owned that directly or if he owned it inside of a mutual fund.
And don't hang up the, don't turn the channel if you're listening to this thinking, how remedial is this?
Or
how
boring.
Academic.
Yeah. Yes. It's not that, come on. It is not.
For some people, it's pretty remedial. And for some, it's academic
For
discussion.
Most, it's not that remedial. They don't quite understand.
Okay, so I bought this bond. I get this $4,000 a year.
Interest rates drop.
2-3%.
And I now, because I saw Pat's making all this money, I think, man, I should go buy this bond as well. And I go to the marketplace and I see that interest rates have dropped to 3%. And I see, so I'm thinking if I bought this, I'd only get $3,000 a year. Pat's getting $4,000 a year. We've been partners for 20 some odd years. I extended Pat. I said, hey, Pat, can I buy your bond from you?
And I would say, absolutely. And you'd say, here's my 100 grand. And I'd say, not so fast. I studied the same sort of economics as you did. you're going to have to pay me a premium for that bond.
A higher price.
A higher price.
Because in the current market, interest rates are lower.
And mine pays a higher price. So
the inverse is true as well. So Pat owns that bond at 4%. Interest rates rise to 5%.
I want to sell it to Scott.
And I said, yeah, I'm not giving you any $100,000 for
it. I'll give you $92,000 or $95,000 or $90,000.
So the past couple of weeks, had you bought this long-term government bond from the United Kingdom, in a four-day period, interest rates rose to the point where if you owned that bond, you suffered an 11% decline. 11%
decline. Now, this is a government bond backed by the full faith and exactly. credit, which means that at redemption, you're going to get whatever the face value in the bond is, highly probable. Plus, they're going to make the interest payments. But it doesn't insulate you from market or interest rate risk.
Right. And so the shorter term bond, the closer we are to that $100,000 return of principal, right?
Let's say a year.
Or a day. 90 days, 30. The closer we are to that maturity date, the closer we are to getting our principal back, the less the interest coupon has any impact on it. And the longer term, the more impact we have on that coupon.
So when you're buying a bond or bond fund, you have to pay a lot more attention to them to other than its history. You have to actually think about, well, are interest rates probably going to go up? Are they going to go down? Are they going to stay the same? What's the credit quality
no one can
of the bond?
Predict the where interest rates
the closer go. Interest rates get to zero, the lower the probability that they will continue to drop. Would you give me that?
I'll give you that.
Okay.
Only because I'm a nice guy.
Right. So the closer that interest rate. So at some points in time, you might be holding bonds in your portfolio and you're sure you're actually saying, I'm not going to make as much as I could have just because I do not want to take the risk. You hear us talk about it on this show often, which is the most important cost in your portfolio is the cost of risk.
Yeah.
Are you being adequately compensated for the risk?
We talk about it in the program here at Hanson McLean. We certainly spend time with our clients on that. So our concern right now, if you've been out there trying to find mutual funds based on their long-term track record even, and it's in the fixed income market and bonds, there's a good chance that you have longer-term maturities. And when rates rise,
there's a
Cycles will continue.
There is a greater probability that rates will rise than they will continue to fall.
That's correct. Now,
there you go.
I'd like to share something received in the my mailbox here at the office. And this nice wrapped gift. And it was a t-shirt that said Rock and Mountain Climbing Ninja.
Wow.
Which I thought was nice. Because I think I talked about on this program. And apparently you received a shirt as well.
With Pat. A bicycle on it.
Very nice. Letter from Steve LaRosa of Steve LaRosa Productions, PR person. I'm going to read this because it was one of the nicest letters I've ever received.
The nicest. One of the nicest.
One of the nicest. Besides my mom's. Oh, maybe that's a stretch. I've never gotten a letter from
you. Wrote a letter to your future self?
What?
You never wrote a letter to your future self?
I might have in junior at some camp or something.
Like, I might have. I don't know what I did with it.
I can't see you taking the time to write a letter
to my future self. Like, future self. What's up?
I can't see Pat going along with that one. Yeah,
I didn't.
So, as a very small token of thanks, first some feedback on the book. I devoured the information in two nights. Very useful and very informative stuff. Thanks for writing it.
And this book is available to you as a listener on moneymatters.com. Are we still discounting it? I'm looking in the... in the booth. It's still a 75% discount if you go to moneymatters.com/book. And 75%.
Yes.
Steve LaRosa came into our office. We gave him a book. That's how we roll.
Yeah, yeah.
You come to our house, give you a book.
In my house. He was in my house. We got t-shirts out of the deal, though. But here, second, I want you guys to know that I subscribe to your podcast, which is this program, and listen to it religiously every week. Thanks for doing that. A great public service. I also listen to your radio show whenever I can catch it. As you recall, I occasionally co-host or report the Travel Guys, which air right after your show on KFBK in Sacramento. And jokingly, I thank you for warming up the audience. At the risk of gushing and embarrassing you with compliments, you two are the most entertaining thing I listen to on the radio, locally and nationally.
You need to get out a little
bit
more,
and it's a financial program, for crying out loud. Not only entertaining, but I'm telling you, I eat up the information you share. Thanks again, blah, blah, blah. So thank you, Steve LaRosa.
And thank you for the nice shirt.
Yeah. And by the way, if you haven't, Steve, please go and you can rate our podcast. iTunes, just handsome. If you look handsome, McLean, you can rate it. I can't tell you.
And if you want, if
to say good, that rate it highly, because that would be asking in for an endorsement, which we can't. But what we can say
is you can go and get your own podcast. The rest of the listeners you get your own podcast delivered.
I have
to
one of my
you.
Good friends has a podcast. He's been doing like 130 shows now.
Have you listened?
But it's shrink. It's interesting. It started out with just like friends, like in the garage or whatever. But it's now, he says, like shrink to shrink. He's a marriage family therapist. And he's fairly conservative. And the other shrink is fairly liberal.
Does he call himself a shrink?
I think the show's called Shrink to Shrink.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right. Are you plugging his podcast or our podcast?
No, I'm not plugging his podcast. That thing. Are you kidding me? That guy. Anyway. Yeah. So, hey, we are going to go. Right now is our time to talk about the new view of retirement. That's right. Each week, Handsome McLean. We've been doing this for several weeks now.
Yeah,
a new
we put in
of
a
program.
New segment, yeah, and it was kind of based on our experience working with people, probably like yourself, people that have gone into retirement. I've seen some people do a tremendous job of retiring, and I'm not just talking about the financial aspect. I'm talking about the emotional, psychological, and social aspects of retirement, and I've seen people do it terribly, and you just want people to do it right. You want people to be happy, especially in this transition. And for some, it's not a good idea to retire. The idea that you're going to quit working. For some
studies have shown that roughly 70% of baby boomers want to continue some sort of employment after age 65.
That's a big number, 70%.
So we've got a great guest, Chris Farrell. And I've read some of Chris's stuff on, he's in a number of different places. He's at PBS's Next Avenue, which is a pretty cool website with stuff. It's designed for baby boomer issues. But he's also with MarketWatch, the big, which is one of my favorite.
Marketplace.
I'm sorry, Marketplace, not the website.
And actually,
Marketplace, one of my favorite PBS
I've got it on my iPhone where it delivers it right to my iPhone Marketplace.
Figured one of that went out, yeah.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. But Chris Farrell is also the author, and here's why we really want him on here, of the book Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. So, Chris, welcome to Handsome McLean.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so thanks, Chris. And I know you've been a writer, a financial writer, for years,
yes.
Essentially your career. And
right.
But have you always been writing on retirement issues, or has this been a shift?
This is a shift. You know, I did a lot of personal finance over the years. I'd say my career is in writing is two things, economics and personal finance. And a lot of the personal finance was on the radio. And, of course, you know, talking about personal finance past 25 years, credit cards are important, student loans increasingly important. But, you know, for the past 25 years, we've had this conversation about the aging of the baby boom population and are they going to be able to retire? And that was really one of the sparks behind this book was there's so much doom and gloom surrounding the aging of the population. They're not going to be able to retire. And I just kind of thought, you know, this can't be quite right. And when that's how you come up with a book idea, you sort of say, is that right? And then you start talking to people. And I think I came up with a thesis that, no, it's actually this sort of gloom and doom is really wrong.
And are you talking about the gloom and doom and the fact that people are not going to be able to afford retirement?
Yeah. That's right. I mean, there are two forms. One is, you know, baby boomers haven't saved that much, and we know they haven't saved that much, and the changes in the retirement savings system to the 401ks made it harder for people to save. But there are a lot of economists also talk about, you know, we're just going to have too many old people and too few young people supporting all these old people, and the underlying dynamism of the U.S. economy is going to just fall apart, and then we're not going to be able to pay our bills, and you just sort of spin it out. We're going to be like Greece. And the thing is, what is happening is that we're a healthier population, we're a better educated population, and people are working well into the traditional retirement years, and we're sort of reimagining, rethinking, what is the good life in these retirement years?
And I think for some, leaving work is not necessarily the good life. Is that what you've discovered?
Yeah, I think, work is kind of the core of this rethinking. Now, most people don't want to continue to work 40, 50 hours a week.
Yeah,
and they
particularly
don't want to be told by the boss.
Yeah, particularly if you have a job that's your toll collector or ditch digger.
Exactly. Or, the boss comes around and says, hey, I want you to be happy. We want you to do less with more, right? Or
yes.
Do more with less. Sorry, more with less. Yeah. Sorry about that. Reverse that one. Yeah. And, so you don't want to do that. But there's a lot of experimentation going on with part-time work, with phased retirement, where you work fewer hours at your current employer, you try some temp work, you do some contract work, and 25% of all new businesses last year were created by the 55 to 64 year old age group.
Is that right? 25%.
Right. Now, some of this is, of course, you get laid off at age 58.
Yeah.
Right, it's hard to get a job. Age discrimination is real.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, we've seen that. It's interesting, Chris, because 25 years of working with Pat, helping people transition retirement, Hans McLean, we've seen so many people just like that. They call it an early retirement, but it's essentially a tap on the,
Yeah, and age discrimination.
So, but here's the thing. What is the most valuable asset of an older worker?
Experience.
It's their network. It's their experience. It's their knowledge. It's their skill. So you might be pushed into self-employment or pushed into doing some entrepreneurship, or you might be pulled into it because there's another group of people who've had this kind of idea and they want to be the boss, maybe a little control, more control of their time. And you begin to realize, hey, I'm getting older. If I'm going to do this, I might as well do it now. So it's both a pull and a push. People in this sort of 55 to 64 year old age group starting their own businesses.
That is really cool. I think, what's kind of fun about it is when when someone's young, they're still trying to figure out what life's going to be about, right?
Right.
They're a little kid, I'm trying to vision their career. And I think younger people think that older people have it figured out.
Right?
We're all still
that guy's 60, he's retiring, they figure it out. It's a lifelong journey. It is. A lifelong
Absolutely.
Journey.
And often just what you're saying, I'm at the age where young college graduates come to me and they say, what is this job thing? What is this career thing? I mean, how do I go about thinking about it? And, they want to be independent. They want to be earning an income, but they want to be doing something that they feel good about. They feel proud about. And, I encourage that. I'm sure you encourage that. That idealism is wonderful. And you kind of leaven it with some practical advice. When I was reporting the book and I'm talking to 60-somethings, it's the exact same conversation. They want an income. They want to be independent. But they want to be doing something that is making them money, but they also feel proud about, that's leaving a legacy, that's giving back to society. So these young college graduates and these 60-somethings, 70-somethings are having the exact same conversation.
They want to be involved in something bigger than themselves, right?
Yes.
We
all want to be useful.
Yeah, yeah, and appreciated for our contributions. And that's the worst thing you see with people is when they, at the end of their formal career, if you will, where they feel that their contribution hasn't been valued or appreciated or that they didn't leave a mark, right?
That's right.
And at age 60, it's a great time to reinvent, isn't it? It just truly is either in the nonprofit sector or the private sector. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And I think what it really has, for the past 25, 30 years, we've had this conversation about retirement, which can be summed up in that phrase, what's my number?
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Do I have enough?
I got it. Here's Chris. I can tell you, as a financial advisor for a couple decades,
you don't know what it means.
Nobody's ever said, I have enough. That's enough, Scott. No more. I've got enough.
Yeah.
It's always a little more.
Could you slow the returns down?
Yeah. Not so fast there.
Yeah. But but that has been the dominant conversation. Now what I think is starting to happen, and this is a much healthier development, and don't get me wrong, savings is important and all that, but it's what do I want to do next? What's going to engage me? What's going to keep me engaged? And I've developed through all the ups and downs of my career. I have this skill. I have this knowledge. I can be really useful. And I want to keep doing this. And I want to do it part-time. I want to have some flexible hours. I might want to have more of a portfolio of things that I'm doing. But it's really what people as they plan for their retirement years, and we still use the word retirement because it kind of tells them what phase of life we're talking about. The plan for your retirement years, I actually think the retirement planning, the key question is to really think about what do you want to do next? What would excite you? What would engage you? What is that? And people don't always know what it is. And so it's kind of an exciting period of time, but it's also a little bit scary because you kind of want to figure that out.
So I would imagine your writing, your reporting has shifted a bit over the years.
Yes.
Has this caused you to relook at your own career path and your own retirement?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure you have something similar where I talk to people who do all kinds of creative things and things that I would not think about. And I mean, now it's more commonplace, but I was doing an interview with somebody and he was a retired teacher and he became a driver and he loved driving people to the airport, lived up in rural Minnesota and he'd drive people, business people to the airport and stuff like that. And he loved this. He was having a great time. It was flexible. And he said the thing is the company didn't care if he didn't show up for 3 weeks. Yep, there was no penalty. So he'd go to Florida for 3 weeks. I'm like, oh, that's exciting. And I meet people who are doing these wonderful things in the nonprofit world or starting their own business. And I go, I could do that. I could do that. Oh, I could do that. And then I sit back and a while later I say, you know what I really like doing? I like talking to these people, I like reporting, and I like telling their stories.
Well, I love the fact you're doing this because I think these stories and this message can not only have an impact on the individual, but I think on society as a whole.
Yes, in two ways. One is I think the most underappreciated economic asset in our society is an aging population. Because we think, well, maybe they're reliable. You know, maybe they'll show up, but they're not really particularly creative. But the thing is, older people are creative. You're creative in your 20s. You're creative in your 30s. You're creative in your 60s and your 70s. And so this notion that just because you're older, you lose your creativity is just absolutely wrong. So they're an underappreciated asset. But I also think the most exciting aspect of all this is how is it going to affect the younger generation? When the younger generation realizes, you know, I am going to be working until I'm 70, that's liberating.
Yeah, is that such a bad thing?
And Chris, you know, so I have this idea of how this retirement was kind of forced on us by the government with the advent of Social Security, because prior to them, it was multi-generations that would live in the same house carrying on different roles. The 70-year-old would stay at home and help with the kids, and they'd have interaction with the family. And all of a sudden, Social Security checks start showing up, and people aren't dependent upon each other anymore, financial reasons. So therefore, there's no reason to keep them living together, right? And we kind of messed the whole thing up with the interdependence between generations.
Well, I think if you look at the data, the generations are living under the same roof again.
Starting to, yes.
They really are. It's really pretty striking. They believe it was 12% of the population in 1980, and now it's over 18% of the population living in multiple
generations. Are these seniors coming in, or are they like my fear that my college-age kids are going to move back with me?
Now, I'm going to argue that college-age kids moving, this is the multi-generational, okay. There'll be seniors, sandwich generation parents, and the young kids. I think that we're making a huge mistake when we, you know, the college kids coming back, because that was my parents had that exact same reaction. But I can't remember, but, you know, the house was about, you know, 1,500 square feet and one bathroom. Today, a lot of houses, you know, double that maybe, have two or three bathrooms. And the fact is, if the kids move in together, why not go into business together? Share the internet costs, share some marketing costs. You can still have your privacy because homes are bigger. And so I actually think that this is something to welcome the kids back because the generations have something to offer each other. And what I have been noticing is that some entrepreneurs are doing this because it just lowers the cost of doing business if the home is the office.
And I am 100% for other people having their college age kids move back.
Well, you know, it's interesting though. You know, it's interesting to talk about some of these things, Chris. Obviously the economic environment and our longevity, increased longevity. Many people don't have a choice but to continue to work.
Right.
But it's interesting to see how sometimes what things that we look at from the outside that first we think this might be a bad thing is actually some of the things that we are going to provide some of the most meaning in our lives.
So, Chris, will you let our listeners know where to find you?
Yes. So you can find me at nextavenue.org. That's the PBS publication online that you mentioned. And you can also, my book, On Retirement, you can find it at independent bookstores or Amazon.com. And I also do stuff for public radio.
And there'll be a link on our homepage as well. So if you go to our homepage, you'll see a link.
And what an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I appreciate it. A big fan.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
It's really been fun. Thank you.
Keep up the work and don't retire anytime soon, because I think we need to hear more stories and more work like you're doing. So
I'm not planning on it.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay.
You know, it was interesting, Pat. I had this last week, I had breakfast with a reporter for an institutional investor. I told her some of the stuff we're working on, and kind of this third phase of life, and she wanted a job. She was she's like, this is where things are going. So pretty exciting. We're taking a quick break, and stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're still with us here on as we have our great radio program as we talk about financial matters and all those
people
sort of
and how sometimes money affects people. And
money is a funny thing.
It's a people's how people interact with money is a funny thing.
There we
go.
Maybe that's even a better way.
And I was having a conversation with my sister about this how much different my brothers and sisters are about money than my parents were. And how that kind of, we got a different gene. Probably a little bit more retirement.
Yeah, but you've
focused.
Got five siblings.
Yes.
And you must not all look at money the same.
Four out of the five do. Nah, five out of the five do. But not all. We haven't always done it. Some of us have done it forever since our first jobs, and some of us have adopted the savings gene in their 40s. and it's an interesting concept, right? It's postponing. Saving for retirement is a form of postponing satisfaction. It's delayed reward.
Sometimes, not always. Okay. Sometimes people save out of a fear of the future and a sense of control.
Yes.
So they believe that money is going to provide this security. And Pat, I mean, we've seen some of the people that sometimes we read these stories, right, of these people that they die and they left $7 million to the library. And people think, oh, my gosh.
And you're like, well, I never knew.
They lived in the same little tiny apartment and drove this.
It's not unusual at all, by the way. It's hard to tell if someone has any money by their lifestyle.
But sometimes people are just, maybe sometimes people just don't care about material things.
Yeah, sometimes people are big hat, no cattle.
But I think sometimes we see people with large savings they save out of fear and looking for the money to provide some security. And then with those people, it's fleeting.
Hard.
It's never quite.
Yeah, there's never quite enough.
Yeah.
There's never.
Well, I tell you, the savings gene skipped my daughter. I know that. It's just it's right gone. It's amazing.
You know, so it's interesting.
Start the summer in debt.
So I have a client that's in the couple. They're in their late 70s, early 80s. And we wanted to buy a new house. And he has ample amount of money. So calls. Pat. I'm buying this new house. We want to kind of get to the right size house for retirement. Single, in town, better health care, single story, beautiful.
As he's aging, late 70s, early 80s, right?
Pretty normal.
A lot of people, it's a change of.
It's $700,000. Do you think we could swing that?
That's a lot of money.
I said to him, you could buy three if you want. You've got enough. You are not running out. And it's just this.
Why do you mention that? Most people can't buy three $700,000 homes. When they're
The reason I mentioned it is the reason he has so much money is because he thinks like that.
Got it.
Right?
So he can buy several of those homes.
But he won't, because that's why he has so much money.
Did he buy the house?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
not three of them.
He didn't buy three. He didn't buy three. And it wasn't easy for him. So sometimes, that's my point, is money is an interesting vehicle. And moving in retirement, right? Downsizing your house or moving to a new area or closer to children is a big topic with retirees. It's like, how do you do it? Should I do it? How do I pay for it? Right? Should I move closer to my kids? First thing to do is before you move closer to your kids, maybe go stay close to your kids for a little while first and see if it actually works for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah. Like more than a week.
My mother-in-law lived 3 miles from us. She moved, but she was like...
Yeah, she was great.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, like the perfect mother-in-law.
We were all jealous. Everyone was jealous of Scott Hansen as his mother-in-law.
She was like the best woman ever.
Yeah.
And she lived 3 miles from us. And it was so great. But how do I say this without offending any other family members? There would probably not be another family member that would work quite like my mother.
And the relationship between your wife and her mother was really good.
Was really good, and it was nice.
But it's the moving, downsizing in retirement is it's hard. It's really big, and moving to a new city for financial reasons only is a
it's not a good idea.
Very, very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. So
very dangerous.
Anyway. And next we're going to take a call. And if you'd like to be part of Hansen McLean, so if you've got a question you think, man, I'd like to run this question by these guys, you can call anytime. And if it's at 2 a.m. and you can't sleep, you think, man, I got a question for these guys, just call, leave a message, and we'll
call
work
you right
something
back.
Out. It'll page Pat.
And I'll call you because I'm up too.
Okay. So you can leave a message and say, hey, this is what is on my, like to have the question. And then we'll arrange when we do our recording and get you on the program. That's how it works. And that's how it works.
And it's easy.
Sarah, our next caller here. And if you'd like to be part of the program, do have a question for us, simply dial 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-242-6766. If you forget all that, just go to our website, moneymatters.com. You'll see the number. Click, call the number, or send an email saying, hey, I've got a question for the guys on the radio.
Or just go to our website anyway, whether you want to call or not, moneymatters.com.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a reason to go to our website. You could just do it out of curiosity if you want.
I suppose you could. Or you're bored and there's nothing on TV.
Yeah. And your Facebook is down or something like that. And you're like, oh, what do I got 20 minutes to burn. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Great do idea. What I do. I go to moneymatters.com.
Yeah, sure you do. Just hanging out there. I love watching the videos of me over and over.
I get the kids in the room. How does daddy look?
All right. We think we're funny. We're not terribly funny. Anyway, let's talk with Sarah. Sarah, you're with Hansen McLean.
Oh, hello.
Hi,
you
Sarah.
You guys are a real kick. You're a real kick. I love your show. I love
Thank
listening
you.
To you.
Thank you.
You make money. You make money laugh. And I'm one of those ones you just talked about. I'm 76 years old, and I'm frightened to death. And I've been poor when I was a kid, and now I have saved sufficiently. I keep working. I'm 76, so I keep working part-time. And I'm delaying gratification. I thought about moving to another state to save money, but my family's here. I'm alone. I have to support myself now. I wanted to live near my grandchildren, but California's expensive. So,
Sarah, how long have you lived in the same house? How many years?
I've been here 21 years. And
okay.
It's a condo. It's a townhouse.
Upstairs, okay. Townhouse. And what kind of work do you do?
And I'm a marriage family therapist.
Okay.
But I work for the military, and I go to different bases and work with the children of the deployed soldiers.
Wow.
And sailors. And yeah. So,
that's cool.
So I still work part-time. I had a practice, but then I gave it up. You know, now they're going to identify me. Everybody out there is going to say, oh, I know who she is, and they're going to hear how much money I've got.
That's okay.
So I hope I'm okay.
It's all right.
See, I'm worried. I worry.
Don't worry about it. They're not going to take your money. So... So let me ask a couple questions. How much do you earn approximately on this job?
Depending on how long I work. Now, this year, probably about $60,000.
Did you say 60?
About that.
And then, and you get Social Security benefits, which probably...
I get Social Security, and I get a retirement from the state of California.
Okay.
And that runs, I get about $3,300 a month total on those two.
Got it. Social Security and pensions about $3,300 a month. Well, that's a nice base to have.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
And so I keep working, but I'm also 76, and I don't know how much longer I can work.
And what's the value of your home?
Okay. I figure $150,000.
Okay. And do you owe anything on it?
No.
Okay.
Beautiful.
What other assets do you have? Money in the bank or retirement plans or anything like that?
Okay. I've got $400,000 saved. And let's see, $125,000 is sitting in the bank doing nothing. I've got $200,000 in bonds, and I've got $75,000 in the company. They have some sort of thing, and it pays 2.2%.
Okay, it's called a GIC or guaranteed interest contract, something like
that.
Is this all a 401k account?
Let's see.
Through work? Do you retire from the state? Is it with the state?
$250,000 is the bonds are a 401k.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a SEP IRA.
All right.
And
you're taking distributions now too, right?
I have to take distributions.
Yeah, because you're 76.
So what's your question for us?
Okay, what do I do?
Because it sounds to me like you're doing great. I mean, you've got a job that's an intellectual job, engaging. You're adding value to people's lives.
They're letting you work part-time.
You've got a home that's paid for. You've got a pension and Social Security.
And you're worried.
Yes.
All right. So here's
I need to invest this.
Well, I don't know if you should change much. The only thing in your portfolio that would concern me is possibly those bonds. And... it would just be the length of the bonds.
Yeah, just make sure they're not too long.
They're not too long. The maturities aren't too long. You would be considered in the top 10%
of retirees.
Of retirees.
Whether you believe it or not, that's reality.
Yeah. And you should not move to a different place. You should stay where you're at.
Are you having trouble working now? Are you like spent, burnt out, or...
No, I'm tired, but I've got a lot of energy. I mean, yeah, I've got a lot of energy, but I just get tired. It's tiring working with children all day long, and you're 76. But I probably get tired at 25.
Oh, that's no point. Yeah. So you're worried about running out of money. Is that what you're worried about?
Yes.
Sarah, you should not worry about.
Yes.
Money. And the reason you actually have money is kind of what we talked about earlier, is because you worry about it, right?
Yes.
You show me someone that doesn't worry about money somewhat, and I'll show you someone that probably doesn't have any. So it's a normal thing to worry about money. It's a normal thing to worry about running out of money.
Yes.
And it's just like with all these other, with the patients you work with. Most of the behavior is normal. It's when they actually start acting on these normal behaviors in an abnormal manner, correct?
Exactly.
Aren't you talking to a therapist, Pat?
I spent a lot of time. I spent a tremendous amount of time talking to therapists.
Well,
some of my best friends are paid therapists.
So the $200,000 in the bonds, just make sure they're not too long. But
yes.
Should I take them out of bonds and put them into the stock market?
No.
Yeah, the stock market's going to crash.
No. So what you would look at is, you said you had the $75,000 into this guaranteed interest contract. Is that in the same plan that GIC is as the bonds?
No, one's with my company. One's with my company. That $75,000, and then the $200,000 I put with some investment man, who forgot to send me my RMDs, and so I was penalized.
Did the investment people pay the penalty?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh well, that's number one.
I'm very wounded and hurt. I'm scared to death of investment people now.
Okay,
so I'm thinking about taking that away from him and putting it somewhere, but I don't know where to.
Sarah, don't put it in the stock market. I don't see the benefit because you're just going to worry more. It sounds to me like you want to keep. So here's your options. Let's say tomorrow something happened and you couldn't work anymore, right?
Uh-huh.
Something happens. Sarah can't work for whatever reason. Here's the options you've got available to you. The $400,000, I'm not saying you should do this. I'm just saying these are options. One is you could take that those dollars and essentially buy another pension from an insurance company.
Or take a 6% distribution on it, which would actually give you $2,000 a month.
You can go somewhere and someone would guarantee you that for life with that.
Yes. And $2,000 a month in addition to the $3,300 a month that you're already receiving.
Right.
Scott, here's what I think she should do, and I don't know if the plan will allow it. I would call the...
See if you can move more money into the GIC.
See if you can move more money into the GIC. I would call the plan that you've got at work there. You have the $75,000, and I would say, can I roll an IRA...
Or a SEP IRA,
my $200,000 into your plan and invest it in that guaranteed interest contract? And if they say yes,
then go for it.
I would do it tomorrow. If you were sitting in my office and you were a client, I would say, take the money and take advantage of these GICs, because that is a great rate of return. I wouldn't expect it to continue to pay that much, much longer, but it's a great place for it right now.
Okay, so what do I do with the money that's in the bank? $125,000.
Oh, just leave it there.
I'd be just...
There. Yeah.
You know, and I look at the money. I mean, I keep some money in the bank too, Sarah, just because I'd like to have, you never know what happens, and you just have some. And I get just as frustrated when I look at the interest rates.
But if you want...
You could buy a CD.
If you want to get a little bit higher rate of return and you're comfortable, you can go to Ally Bank, which is an online bank, or you can go to Synchrony Bank, which is an online bank, and you could get a higher rate of return. Or you're in the Sacramento area, correct?
Yeah.
You could go to Beal Bank and buy a CD that's going to yield 1.2% or so. And so those are the highest yielding types of FDIC insured accounts you're going to find.
Yeah, just around one, a little over one. But it might not be a bad idea to take maybe 100,000 of it and put it into that.
Buy a 1 year CD.
A 1 year CD.
Yeah.
Just one year.
I wouldn't go out.
Yeah. But quit worrying.
Don't worry. You're in good shape.
Quit worrying, please.
And if something happened tomorrow and you couldn't work, there's a lot of other options to generate income. We didn't even talk about a reverse mortgage.
We never even talked about a reverse mortgage.
That's a last resort, but you've got lots of options, Sarah. Don't worry.
So if I can't work tomorrow, if something happens and I
call
can't
us.
Work, may I call you back?
Absolutely. Please do.
We'd love to help. I'm tickled that you're 76 and you're working with the children of the military family.
How lucky are they?
I know.
How lucky are you?
How much what?
No, how fortunate both the children are that get to work with you, and how fortunate are you that you get to work with the children. It's a blessing.
I love it.
It is an absolute blessing.
That's my missionary work, I think, for the Lord.
And the nice thing about this missionary work is it pays well.
Yeah.
I think you guys are just lovely. God bless you.
Thank you, Sarah, for being
on the radio.
Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate it. You know, what's interesting, Pat, is we had Chris Farrell on the program earlier, and he was talking about how people are working, want to continue working later, and then here we have a call from Sarah. And again, if you'd like to be, if you've got a question for us, something in your retirement, trying to figure out how you can make the money last, or maybe you're mid-50s and you're thinking, I don't know if I have enough money for retirement. Does it make sense for me to do something different? Whatever the financial question is, to join Hanson McLean, and you can call anytime. We're not during normal business hours, we'll talk to you. We could schedule time to record your call, or if it's after hours, whatever. 1-888-2 Hanson to join the program. Again, 1-888-2 Hanson. And now let's talk real advice. All right, real advice. The segment that we started a few weeks ago with Hanson McLean.
And it's where we actually talk to an advisor at Hanson McLean, and they kind of walk us through either a common scenario or an uncommon scenario that they have worked with a client. And today we have Dave Cox. Dave Cox has been with us for 20 plus years.
Yeah. We had his 20-year anniversary not that long ago.
He's a certified financial planner. He's got a a degree in business, and he's good at what he does, and probably one of the most passionate advisors that I've ever met. Not just the most passionate advisor at Hanson McLean, but one of the most passionate really? Advisors I have ever met.
Just a passionate guy. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Good to be back on the program. It's been a while.
Yeah. I think it has been a while since you've been on Hanson McLean's Money Matters. So I don't know what you did to get back on, but you've done something well.
Yes. Keep it up. And you know what's interesting? If you've been listening to the show from the beginning of the hour, we talked to Chris Farrell, who talked about how companies are actually doing what are called phase retirements, where they're allowing the employees to decide what their retirement will look like. And Dave, how old are you?
I'm 60.
And do we have
60? Did you get my birthday card?
Dave,
sorry.
Do we have
like every year?
We have a phased retirement for our advisors at Hanson McLean that allow them to do exactly what many corporations are now incorporating, which is to allow the advisor to decide what the retirement looks like and to phase in if they want, regardless of their age. Correct it?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked before about, and you guys talk a lot about it on the program, about, you know, retirement's changed, right? And so, like for me, you know, I love what I do. This is, as you said, you know, this is a passion of mine and whatnot. And we have this program available at Hanson McLean to kind of pick and choose what that looks like. But with retirement changing, you know, I identify my job as part of who I am, you know, and as long as I have my faculties, I'm the kind of person that wants to continue on and work. But the beautiful thing is that you guys give the opportunity, you know, or we do at Hanson McLean to be able to pick and choose what that looks like.
Yeah. And
we're starting to see more employers do that, and hopefully we'll see more. So anyway, this segment is really not about Dave, but we enjoyed Dave being on here.
And we've got about 4 more minutes to talk about this particular. So keep that in mind when you're walking us through this.
Dave makes everything really quick.
Pat knows how I like to talk, so he's already given me the time.
Yeah. We're going to actually use sound when you hear a bell.
So tell us briefly, what this is a client you worked with. What was the problem? What did you help? What did you do?
Well, this was a client that came into the office recently, and you know, they were both, you know, 62 and 64, and they had inherited money, and inherited a pretty sizable amount of money for them. It was about $650,000 in cash proceeds, and they were really just kind of unsure as to what to do and looking for direction. So,
was there much? Kind of an emotional ties to it. I know sometimes when people inherit money and it's mom's money and they feel funny about how to spend it. And was there those issues too?
There wasn't actually. And you're correct, Scott, that we do run into that situation. But in this particular situation, no, they didn't have any emotional ties to the money, but they were just very unsure. You know, the good thing was that they said, hey, look, you know, we don't want to be lazy with the money. We want to make the right decision. We're not sure, and we need to go seek out advice and go get help versus, hey, we're going to go do this and do that. So, but no emotional ties to the money.
So what is the recommendations you gave them, Dave? Just bring us right into the recommendations.
So I'll give you briefly, very quickly, where they were sitting at is, you know, they had $120,000 of income. They had some short-term cash needs. They hadn't really spent a lot of time talking about retirement. In fact, I will tell you right now, this money was a blessing to them. So when we got into recommendations, I took a look at their overall situation. I said, look, you know, we need to set up some emergency cash. We determined that was going to be somewhere around $50,000. They've got a house that was kind of running down. We needed to take care of setting some money aside for the roof, the windows, some bathroom and kitchen. So we set aside about $60,000 there. And then we start focusing on retirement goals. I get a mortgage of $120,000. I said, look, let's make that mortgage go away. Let's take $120,000, put it toward the mortgage, free up $1,000 a month. And now we can really start focusing on the rest of these dollars going toward their retirement objectives and freeing up that $1,000 to supplement that in about 4 to 5 years. So they kind of had this outside thought process of retiring, but really hadn't honed in on it and really hadn't thought about it. And that's why I say this was really a blessing for them, because had this not happened, they would not necessarily be in any kind of shape to retire somewhere in this 4 to 8 year time frame.
And at the end of the day, they're comfortable with their outlook. And this money was a blessing that could have been squandered, but in fact, they used it intelligently. So we have compliance restrictions on the show. So I was reminded by compliance that although this was the experience of Dave's client, it may not actually be indicative of your experience if you work with Dave or Hanson McLean yes. as a firm.
Matter of fact, you might have a bad experience.
Yeah, or it could be incredible. You just don't know. But compliance tells us we have to let people know that your experience will
be
your
experience.
Was
there anything else that was like interesting or unique about this?
Well, I think the interesting or maybe the uniqueness of this is, look, when you sit down with anybody to help from a planning standpoint, you never want to plan on inheritance. Now, a lot of us obviously would be in that situation where we're going to receive monies, but you really, you know, you want to look at that person's personal situation and set the inheritance off to the side. So the uniqueness part of this was really kind of what I had said before is had they not received this inheritance, my gosh, you know, they would be working most likely for the rest of their lives because of just their personal situation where they were at.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to help them, and I'm glad you're at the firm Hanson McLean.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Dave Cox is in our Folsom office in Northern California, and you can learn more about Dave by going to HansonMcLean.com. And anyway, we are running out of time for the program. We certainly appreciate you being part of Hanson McLean. If you'd like to learn more about Hanson McLean, you can go to HansonMcLean.com and you'll learn more about our firm. If you want to schedule a time to meet with maybe an advisor, sit down and talk with Dave Cox or someone like Dave, we've got a team of fantastic advisors. We are quite biased and we think they're fantastic. So you can also you can contact Hanson McLean at 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. And this was pretty much it.
Yeah, and
for our
Scott's
time
book.
This week.
Yeah. MoneyMatters.com.
If you don't have it yet, get the book. It's been great having you guys with us this week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.